One of the most enduring myths in the history of HIV has finally been laid to rest. So-called Patient Zero, the Canadian flight attendant universally blamed for introducing AIDS to North America, the sexually insatiable vector whom the New York Post called the man who gave us AIDS, was simply not. Last week, a paper in the journal Nature explained how, by re-examining original blood samples taken from Dugas in 1983, scientists determined that his strain of the virus had been present in the hemisphere decades before and in the country years before Dugas frequented the gay scene in New York and San Francisco. Michael Worraby is an evolutionary biologist at the University of Arizona in Tucson and the lead author of the Nature paper. His research reveals that the Patient Zero story is an ongoing black comedy of mischaracterization, including the premise that Dugas was uncommonly promiscuous.
It was a cohort that had a large number of sexual partners on average, in the order of 225 per year. I believe Patient Zero was 250. But yeah, it's a sexually transmitted virus, and a lot of the early cases were people who had a lot of sexual partners.
So not only wasn't he the original vector, his sexual habits weren't all that unusual. Young gay man in the 80s. He got around.
Yeah, exactly. And so leaving aside the popular imagination version of him being the person who actually brought the virus to North America, which is not the case, even if you look at the scientific understanding, he was positioned at the visual center of this very important network of people who'd had sexual contact with each other amongst the earliest handful of AIDS patients that the CDC identified. Now, part of the reason that he ended up in that central position is because he was unusually helpful to investigators. He kept records of people he'd had sex with and was able to provide way more names. If everyone else had been able to provide as many names as him, I don't think we'd be talking about it right now.
So in the category of no good deed goes unpunished, he was an unusually cooperative epidemiological witness. And the thanks he got was to be branded the Typhoid Mary of AIDS.
That's pretty much it. Not only did he provide a lot of epidemiological information that helped these researchers suggest to the world that this was a sexually transmitted disease, which was very, very important, he flew to Atlanta and provided blood samples that ended up being useful for our study that we did in 2016, where we can see how his virus looks compared to other early viruses that we sampled from the pre-AIDS era.
I want to ask you about what we now know, which is based on viral fingerprints that are far more rigorously examined than the state of the art permitted back in 1984. How did the HIV virus enter the States, and how do we know?
Our recent study is building on a remarkably clear understanding of the origins of this virus. And in a nutshell, and very quickly, HIV/AIDS is a viral disease that we got from chimpanzees. If you go to sub-Saharan Africa, dozens and dozens of non-human primates have a related virus. Unfortunately, at some point, one of these viruses moved from chimps to humans. We think that was probably almost 100 years ago in Southeast Cameroon. Since then, it's been circulating in Central Africa. And we estimate that one branch of that family tree of viruses moved into the Caribbean sometime in the late 60s. And in this current study, with these complete genomes that we've recovered from a bunch of samples from the 1970s from New York City and San Francisco, we can place a really quite precise date on the jump into North America, probably in particular into New York City, at around 1971. So this thing that was killing these young gay men in California and New York that was breaking news in 1981, by that point was probably 50 years old.
Gaétan Dugas himself died of AIDS in 1984. and posthumously got the insult to fatal injury of being labeled patient zero. Tell me how that whole term began to get traction in the literature and in the culture.
He was originally called case 057 because he was the 57th person who came to the CDC's attention. At the same time, they start doing an epidemiological analysis that focuses on some of the early patients in Southern California and realize that this patient is linked sexually to some of these people. They label him no longer as patient 57, but as patient O, because he's from outside the California area.
O, not zero, O, for outside, like a misread license plate number or a misread credit card number or VIN number. And because the American practice is not to put a slash mark through our zeros, an easy mistake to make. Who made it?
No one knows the answer to that question as far as I can tell, but internally within CDC, people working on this epidemiological study started to refer to patient O as patient zero before this paper was published. By the time the paper's published, he enters the scientific literature as patient zero. But it wasn't until the publication of a very influential and in many ways fantastic book called And the Band Played On by Randy Schiltz in 1987 that this patient zero term went really, really widespread. Schiltz was able to piece together who the person referred to in the scientific paper as patient zero was and makes it a thread that runs through his book. When the book is published, his editor convinces him that it would be good for book sales to really sell it on the idea of this Typhoid Mary analogy. And my understanding from my co-author, who's a historian, a guy named Rich McKay, who's done a sort of forensic analysis of the genesis of this misinformation, is that Schiltz was horrified initially at this idea, but relented and was convinced that maybe that was going to be the best thing to get the word out. On the overall contents of the book, which was sort of an indictment of the slow response by the Reagan administration to pay much attention to HIV/AIDS.
Some have questioned the ethics of outing the first case and turning a victim of a disease into some sort of scallywag. On the other hand, from an epidemiological point of view, it is critical, is it not, that the origin of a viral outbreak be identified in order to chase it down?
I would reiterate that patient zero was not the first patient in any way, shape, or form. He was the 57th to come to people's attention. Many other people had symptoms even earlier than him, even within that original study. And so the value of outing him, I'm not convinced that that had much scientific or public health value at all. And I am convinced that it had tremendously negative consequences on his reputation, no doubt on his family. And it probably played into this idea that people who have HIV themselves should somehow be to blame rather than the virus itself.
The other day, I saw a story in the New York Times about the ethics of hunting down so-called patient zero. And in that piece, Dugas is said to have been exonerated by the new medical evidence, which struck me as an odd word because it suggests that he had been felt to be guilty of something. So even in exonerating Dugas, we seem to be indicting carriers of the disease in general.
You know, I had exactly the same reaction to that word, and it came up in a lot of the interviews that I've done since publishing the paper. And each time I suggested that maybe we shouldn't use that kind of word because it suggests that some other individual who would have been the first patient infected in the U.S., and part of what our research shows is that most of the U.S. epidemic does trace back to a single founding infection, probably in New York City in the early 70s, that somehow that person should be viewed as guilty of something. There's this constant desire to blame people when we should be placing our emphasis on this nasty pathogen. That's part of the history of the HIV/AIDS pandemic that is still a feature of the pandemic as it spreads today. The virus thrives on misunderstandings and misinformation, and hopefully this research might fight back a little bit against some of that.
Michael, many thanks.
Thank you so much, Bob.
Dr. Michael Warraby is the Louise Foucault Marshall Science Research Professor at the University of Arizona. This has been an On the Media Podcast Extra. I'm Bob Garfield.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.